In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning and happy Saturday to everybody out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. Live from First String Sports, and I am your host, Paul Metters. It's going to be a gorgeous day, isn't it? Gosh, you can already feel it. We had a really good week of weather, but today is going to be one of those extraordinary spring-type March days. March 16th, the year of our Lord, 2024, coming in again. My name is Paul Metters. I'm the host of the Central Valley Sports Report. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the show, sponsoring 1430 ESPN. I mentioned that gorgeous weather. It's 57 degrees right now with a high of 72. That's the way we like it, right? Upper 70s here in the Central Valley is most welcome, and March is definitely the season for that. So thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring 1430 ESPN. All right, you can follow me on Twitter or on X, whatever you want to call it, at Paul Metters, P-A-U-L. M-E-A-D-O-R-S. You could also follow the station at 1430 ESPN. I mentioned that I do my show here at First String Sports, Blackstone Avenue, in between Sierra and Herndon. I do my show off to the right-hand side. Nice little cavern, I like to call it, in the Letterman's Jacket Room. There's this beautiful neon sign that says Letterman's Jackets. It's really, really neat. Hang a right, sitting in the room where looking at Letterman's Jackets from Sanger, Sanger West, Madera, Clovis West, Liberty, Sunnyside, Fresno Christian. That's just on the left side behind me. I got Clovis North, Parlier and Clovis. They share the same color scheme. Kingsburg, Sierra High School. And to my right, Buller, Central, Selma, Kalinga, Woodlake, Torres. The Toros are in the house. Hoover High and Kerman. We got some Kerman guys I'm going to mention here in just a couple minutes who's coming on the show. So if you're new to the show, you haven't listened before, normally it's pure high school talk from 10 to 12. Throw in a little Fresno State every once in a while, and we're going to be talking about Fresno State because lots of stuff is going on. One of the positive things is it's the baseball program. Baseball program is off to an excellent start, 13-4 right now. Spring practice for Fresno State football has begun, so a lot of my media friends have been checking those out the last few days. And basketball, obviously. Basketball season ended on Thursday. Lost to Utah State. And it was a game they could have won. But the big news, obviously, is Justin Hudson, Fresno State men's basketball coach, and Fresno State University have decided to part ways. I think we've seen that coming for a while. It was the final year of his contract. Pretty much knew it wasn't going to be renewed. Another season of 20 or more losses. But speculation has begun as who's going to take over the program. Now, is it an attractive job for coaches? Heck yeah, it is. All right, a lot of talk about NIL and resources and lack of money. I mean, the data is out there. The Fresno State is one of the lowest teams with access to, the stuff that can make a really, really good program and make waves in the NCAA. Resources. I mean, coming down to the airplane flights to NIL money, of course, that is a huge, huge topic. So we're going to be talking a little bit about Fresno State basketball today. But in the second hour, well, I might as well mention what's coming on after the break. We got Tim Slack, and he is the communications director at Fresno Pacific University. If you heard Thursday's show from 3 to 5, Home Field Advantage, Tim Slack took over for the recently departed Gabe Camarillo, who was a mainstay here at 1430 ESPN. Tim Slack is coming on the show. We're talking basketball, a little wrap-up of the Fresno Pacific University basketball season. Talk a little bit about the baseball season, how that's going. We all are big fans of Oscar Hirschhorn and the job that he's done there at Fresno Pacific. So we'll chat with Tim Slack for about 10 to 12 minutes. And after that, I mentioned Gabe Camarillo. He's coming on. We didn't have a proper send-off for Gabe on my show. He produced my show for the 2.5 years. It's been on 1430 ESPN. He was a mainstay with his show from 3 to 5, Monday through Thursday. We broadcasted tons of games together. So Gabe's coming on. We're going to be talking about all the Fresno State stuff, the basketball. There's a lot of names out there. And I'm going to ask him, who is your top three, per se, out of this list that I have, who he's hearing might be taking the job Soon, we got to get somebody in here really, really soon. All right, the roster. I mean, the roster is graduating some guys. Who's going to be coming back? Tons of questions about the baseball basketball program. So we'll be chatting with Gabe about that and about the baseball program as well. At the top of hour number two, a little after 11 o'clock, we got Kerman Baseball in the house. Coach Jared Coleman has done a phenomenal job there. He's a mainstay at the school, a graduate of the school. He's a Kerman Lion through and through. And we're bringing in a couple seniors, Adam Delgado, Gilbert Acosta. Those guys are four-year players on the varsity program. They're off to an excellent start, 7-2 on the season. And they're not shying away from playing against the big boys. They're not. They play Bakersfield Christian. Their only two losses are to arguably two of the top, let's say, four teams in the Central Section, Bakersfield Christian and Clovis North. So really excited about chatting with Coleman and a couple dudes at the top of hour number two. Bottom of hour number two, Brandon Gilbert. He's the athletic director at Bullard High School. I've known Brandon for a few years. He's been on the show before. What's going on with high school sports and the playoff system? There's going to be a big vote. I think it might be this week, actually. No more when Brandon comes on the show. But there's going to be a big vote on league realignment. I don't want to spoil too much, but I'm hearing that our top division, which, again, we don't have an open division, top division one might be split into two parts, right? A lot of talk about, well, do we allow the top 16 teams in the Division I playoffs? Right? It's almost like lambs to the slaughter for teams 14, 15, 16, which usually is the case when you have a bracket like that, right? But talk about splitting that up, making two different divisions. So you can hear more from Brandon about that. Lights at Bullard High, that's always been a hot topic. Where are we at with that? Even football fields shared by Fresno Unified. Got a lot of questions about that. So Brandon is definitely a man. He's the league representative of the CMAC to the CIF. So he's going to have some really good information for everybody out there. Speaking of Bullard, yesterday they had Mike Noakes Day at Mike Noakes Field. Imagine that. And it was the, I believe it was the opener, right, of CMAC play. Well, they played San Joaquin Memorial, so it was a league game, but I'm pretty sure it was the league opener. And they absolutely blasted the Panthers, 12-0. They better not lose on Mike Noakes Day, right? Logan Cunningham, who's been easy merged as Bullard's number one guy. Doesn't throw really hard, but throws strikes. Can move the ball in and out. Got a decent off-speed pitch, but he's emerged as Bullard's top pitcher. He went five innings, only gave up four hits. Beckett Zavorak went 4-for-5 with four runs and two RBIs at the leadoff position. That dude's a gamer. Keenan Gomez, who's been hurt this year, he's headed to San Diego State, scored a run, had an RBI. Brent Munger, he's a transfer from Central Valley Christian. He's a senior. He is a big, big dude. He looks like a Division I player, and he is. Talking about college. He and Beckett have both signed with Arizona State. Well, Brent, they've been a little bit of slump. Right? Sometimes it take some adjusting, go to Central Valley Christian, no knock on them. But, you know, when you go up and you're facing consistently high 80s and guys touching 90 miles per hour, almost hit 90 degrees, 90 miles per hour, there could be an adjustment period. Well, you went 3-for-3 with a double and four RBIs in the middle of that lineup. Been waiting for the bats to wake up. Right, Wyatt Rosenthal went 3-for-3. They're 4-5 on the season, the Knights are. And a lot of talk about, well, who's going to step up pitching-wise? I mentioned that Cunningham's their number one guy. Well, they have 3 one-run losses on the season. A couple 3-2 games. I think there was a 2-1 game that they lost. You know, if you get a big hit, make a clutch play here, you win the ball game. But they haven't done that in the early season. I mean, Coach Tom Donald would readily admit that. But, yeah, I think once league play starts – and they hit their stride, they're going to be a dangerous team. But that field, guys, Mike Noakes Field, is an absolutely gorgeous baseball field. If you haven't driven by there lately, heck, even when there's not a baseball game going on, get out of your car or park in the parking lot, get out of your car and take a walk and look how beautiful it is. Jim Sandrini is a staple at the school. It's got that field looking immaculate. Also, you guys might not know this, but they moved the fences back. And there's no maybe I'll ask Brandon this. But there's no markers for how long it is to the foul poles or to dead center. But, heck, I got to think it's 400 feet to dead center. It is a huge ballpark, and they wanted it that way. Thought it would play to their advantage. But Bullard baseball, you know, I think they're probably cracked the top 10 right now, well on their way. So congratulations to the Knight. Congratulations to Mike Notes. Got those two national championships. I believe 5 Central Section championships, 7 total for the school. But, congratulations to Mike Noakes. Mike Noakes Day, that's going to be an annual thing. Before we hit the break here, talk to Tim Slack. I do rankings for SB Live, for a website. I've done it. I did it all year for football, came out every week. I did it for basketball as well, for boys and girls. And we're well aware of the Carruthers girls and what they did in Division III, winning the state title. That was awesome. That was awesome. So here are the final rankings for girls basketball. Clovis West, number one. No question. They won their 12th straight Central Section title, number one, over number two, St. Joseph. St. Joseph gave them a battle. That game was only 45-41. The Knights showed a lot of mettle in that game. So my number two team for girls finishing is St. Joseph. Number three, I got Carruthers. I had to do it. I would love to see Carruthers play St. Joseph. That would be a really good matchup. But the Blue Raiders, impressive story, made state waves as the 14 seed, went ahead and beat the 3, the 2, and the 1 on the road, and won the whole darn thing. Coach Anna Almeida and a couple girls were on the show last week, so that was a lot of fun. But Carruthers is my 3 team. This is where it gets a little murky. I got Buchanan at 4, Central at 5, Bakersfield Christian 6. They're the D3 champs. I very easily could have put Bakersfield Christian above those teams, but I thought the body of work, the strength of schedule for Buchanan Central was a little bit higher, but those could be interchangeable. Menachi, who won the D2 title, they're number 7. Clovis is number 8. San Joaquin Memorial, 9. And Tehachapi is 10. And the boys, Clovis North finishing number 1, of course, because they beat St. Joseph for the D1 title in the Central Section. That was a great game. They won one game in state in the open division in NorCal before falling to Archbishop Reardon. St. Joseph, my number 2. Yeah, they went into the SoCal open division, had that great upset against Sierra Canyon. Tunde Yesufu hit that fadeaway jump shot from about 15 feet. But I got St. Joseph as a clear number 2. Clovis West boys, number 3. Centennial made it all the way to the state championship before losing to Oakland Tech. They're my number 4 team, and I had them at number 4 even before the state playoffs. So those guys proved my point. So congrats to Centennial for making that far. I got Bullard at number 5 for basketball. They were one game away from going to the D3 championship game. They lost to Santa Cruz, so I got Bullard at number 5. Bakersfield Christian at number 6. They did a great job as a 12 seed. They won 2 games on the road in D2, beat Long Beach Poly and La Costa Canyon. They're my number 16. Clovis East is 7, San Joaquin Memorial 8. Dinuba 9, and North Bakersfield, those stars, they won their D3 title here in the Central Section and went all the way to the SoCal D5 championship game before they fell. So those are my top 10. All right, one more thing I want to mention before we hit the break. This is normally my week that I am not here. For the last 2 years, when I've had a radio show, I've missed this week because me and the guys, my fun guy friends, we've been in Las Vegas to watch the Mountain West Tournament. College basketball for a 3-day, 2-night excursion. But didn't go this year to Las Vegas. Decided to change it up a bit, and we got a cabin in Shaver Lake. So a buddy of mine got a family cabin. Said, hey, all right, let's take it a little bit easy this year. Let's just go and relax. And so I was there yesterday, drove home last night, be able to do the show and bring you all this great information. But yeah, lots of fun, man. We our setup looks like Las Vegas, so to speak. We got 3 TVs in the main room where we're hanging out. You know, the guys are making bets on their phone. I didn't do it. Full admission. I don't gamble online. If I was in person, I would. But making bets on the phone, cheering when the over hits, right? Hoping for that half a point. So lots of fun. Lots of fun. So happy to bring you guys all the good stuff that's happening here in the Central Section. Decided to keep it home. So lots of good stuff here. Lots of basketball to talk to as well. I'm going to be talking with Tim Slack about Fresno Pacific basketball and baseball coming up on the break on 1430 ESPN. Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Meaders, live here at First String Sports, Blackstone Avenue, in between Herndon and Sierra. I call it the place to be. I just gave a shout-out to my guys watching college basketball at Shaver Lake. I might be driving back there for some of those hot championship games. There might be a couple of leftover quesadillas as well. I made some gourmet quesadillas last night, man, to order. Anything you want, man. Any type of meat, mushrooms, salsa, sour cream. I had it all. So, man, I hooked the guys up last night for sure. So I might be making my way and watch some more basketball. I want to bring in Tim Slack right now. Speaking of basketball, he does a fantastic job at Fresno Pacific University. He's the director of communications there. And you heard him. You heard him Thursday. That was awesome. Home field advantage at Fashion Furniture. Did a good job kind of on the fly a little bit, but really excited about bringing him on and doing some more stuff here on 1430 ESPN. So, Tim, how you doing, my friend? I know you're kind of in transition, driving a little bit. You got a T-ball game to go to, and then you got some stuff happening at the university. So thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. My son literally just hit the ball as you're introducing me, and so I'm getting to watch my four-year-old play and enjoying it. And then I got to sprint back over very carefully, of course, to FPU as they wrap up a series baseball against Hawaii Hilo today.
So your son is 4 years old, and he hit the ball as soon as I came on and announced your name. So how poetic is there? But did he run the right way? Because, you know, when you're 4 years old, sometimes you don't quite know which way to run. But did he at least run to first base and try to make it all the way home?
Oh, he's got it, man. He's my imitator. He watches games with me and tries to do it. They just hit it, and he took off right on time without a coach telling him. So proud dad moment that you're getting to capture on air right now.
Excellent. I love it, man. That is, yeah, definitely shows that he knows the sport. I mean, there's no amoeba players. Like, sometimes you see that, right? They're all kind of running to the ball. They're not sure where to go. But congrats to him on knowing exactly what to do, man. I love it. All right, so, Tim, I want you to give a little bit of a wrap-up about Fresno Pacific basketball, the men's and the women's teams. I know the heartbreak that the women's team had. Heard you a little bit on Thursday, and then got information here from the website. God, that's just heartbreak city for sure. But I definitely want to talk about that. But kind of give us a little synopsis on how the men's and women's teams went this year.
Well, I tried to put a positive spin on it Thursday because I had, you know, head coach Tim Beauregard, Felicia Dorva, Mason Ricks all on home field advantage with me, and that honestly made me feel really comfortable, made me feel at home. And then, of course, the people at Fashion Furniture were great, too. But all you guys at 1430. But I think that there is heartbreak because this team is the best women's basketball finish in 20 years for FPU, the best of the NCAA D2 era, right? They hadn't won 20 games since they made the transition about 9 years ago. And Tim Beauregard has done just a fantastic job building a community there. And, you know, he emphasizes local players, Felicia, the exception from Sweden, who's just a star this year in the conference. And hence why Felicia and Mason were both first-team all-conference selections. But 20-win season, they were in second place pretty much all year behind Azusa, who's just a juggernaut and even won yesterday in their opening round. But the heartbreak was twofold, right, is they felt like, hey, if they win Friday night against Point Loma at Point Loma in the PacWest tournament, they were going to have a chance to make the NCAA regional because they were a game better than Point Loma. They took two out of three from them, including that game on that Friday night. And then they take Azusa, who they had him on the ropes. It was a three-point lead for Fresno Pacific with about a minute left. And then they're just heartbreaking that game. Some frustrating things happened. Azusa did kind of what they've done all year. They hit a late bucket, forced overtime, and then overtime. So you still felt like it was a pretty good chance because of the way they played and the way they showed in that conference tournament and the way they were kind of peaking late and just getting better as the season went on. And then the selection committee announces that Point Loma was in over Fresno Pacific. So there was just heartbreak and disappointment there. Point Loma had beaten the number one team in the CCAA earlier in the year, the first game of the year. And anyways, I say that, and I say there's a physical pain that's still there, but couldn't be more proud of that team. Tim Beauregard, like I said, did a fantastic job. one of the best benches I've ever seen. He plays 13 players in a quarter, and it works. You know, wow. They just come out with energy all the time, and it was a special season to be a part of, for sure.
Well, I want to ask you, Tim, and I know you're the director of communication, so you got to be somewhat guarded in a way, but was there any reason given for Fresno Pacific women's team not making the tournament, or is it just, hey, too bad, so sad, we picked the other team, we picked Point Loma?
So I didn't do a good job of explaining this on Thursday, but it's basically math at the D2 level. You look at it, and it's strength of schedule, and those non-conference games that you play weigh heavily. And so Point Loma had beaten San Marcos. That is one of the better wins because nobody really beat Azusa. And so you look at San Marcos as one of the next teams down the list, and that was a quality win that I think mattered a lot when it came down to the math of it. And so that's the best explanation of it. It just turned out to be, you know, the non-conference schedule weighed a little bit more heavily than beating Point Loma, the team that got in 2 out of 3 times.
Got it. Okay. And you hit it right. Tim Beauregard's does a phenomenal job, and he's so well-spoken, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, just as Coach C.J. Haydock does for the men's program as well. He was on the show. He's been a friend of mine for well over 30 years. They hit a little bit of a hot streak in the middle of league and had played some phenomenal games. I think they had a 3-overtime thriller that lasted 3.5 hours. So a lot of wild things happened during the season. I know he had some injuries and only suited up 7 players, I think, or 8 players a couple times. But what an incredible job CJ does, not only on the court but in the community. So give a little wrap-up on the men's team this season.
Well, it was a young team, and that game that you're talking about was actually 4 overtimes.
4, okay.
And I'm still – that was in January. I think I'm still recovering from calling that game. I was emotionally taxed after it. But it was a young team that played with plenty of fight. You look at the scores, there were some lopsided ones. It was a team built around defense, and that's what CJ's going to do. And so I think you look at the success they had in certain spots. You know, they opened the season with an exhibition against Fresno State and were leading for part of it. They had some early games. They started the season tough. It took them a while to find a win, but they were in them all, you know, up until a couple minutes left. And so he started, 4 underclassmen pretty much every game all season long, despite the injuries. And even I think some of those underclassmen would have started more if they weren't injured themselves. And so there were a lot of things that just felt like it were obstacles for a young team that was learning and growing. But there were some special moments, too. You know, the winning streak in the middle of the year that kind of came out of nowhere. They'd gone from no conference wins to 4 in the span of about 2 weeks. And you look at guys like Isaac Peralta, Harrison Panisi, Gabe Quiet, that were dynamic guys in the conference that people were really concerned about, I think, on their scouting reports. And again, there's a long runway because you got a nucleus of guys, 5, 6 guys, really, that still have 2 more years together. And so there's a lot of a big part of a solid foundation for sure.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And you mentioned, Tim, that you're on your way to Fresno Pacific University. And again, I'm one of those guys. I'm an FPU grad, so I will slip up every once in a while calling it Fresno Pacific College, and I almost did right there. So FPU, you're headed there for the baseball games against Hawaii Hilo. Looks like a doubleheader, 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock. But the Sunbirds under Oscar Hirschhorn are currently 11-9, 7-7 in conference. Give us a little synopsis on how the baseball team is doing right now. We got a few minutes here. Looking forward to hearing about the baseball squad.
Well, they need to pile up some wins right now. I think Coach would tell you that himself. And last night, a game early on where the offense had some chances. They drew 10 walks in the game, had the bases loaded 3 different innings. And I think 2 of those 3 innings before the night, they would get only a run out of it. And so this offense that's hitting .310 leads the Pac West right now in terms of total offense. And they can hit the baseball, still working out some of the pitching, but then they bounce back. Oh, by the way, in that first game, they had the the winning run at the plate. So they were down six heading into the bottom of the ninth, had the winning run at the plate against Hilo's closer, and just ran out of outs, essentially. And so they had to bounce back last night, and they did, and the offense picked up kind of where they left off towards the end of the game. Andrew Valdez had two homers in that game. Shane Purcell hit his first. And then Jalen Rodriguez is a guy from Visalia, transferred from College of Sequoias. He's been kind of the ace reliever, not a closer, not a starter necessarily in his career at FPU, but he got a start last night in game two, through six innings with solid, retired the first eight batters he faced. And so as guys, it's a big roster, as guys get those opportunities to step up, this is a team that can be dangerous. All they really got to do is get into that PacWest tournament, and they're going to cause some problems for anybody they play.
Yeah, so the first game of the doubleheader yesterday, they lost 6-9 and then responded, like you said, with an 11-5 victory. Another doubleheader, man. That's a lot of innings. That's a lot of baseball. What's going to be your role during those baseball games? What's your exact thing that you do over there?
Well, I'll be on the mic for those two. I was on it last night, so it was just a great opportunity to talk about these guys doing play-by-play. We'll have a live stream. People can find it at fpuathletics.com. And looking forward to it today. I think this is a big moment. You know, the Sunbirds lost the first series of the year against number 4 Point Loma after they 10-run them in the first game. They turned around. They split a series in Chaminade in Oahu, and then they won the series at Hawaii Pacific. So now an opportunity to win back-to-back series today with a sweep. And I'll be on the call for it, so I'm excited for that.
No, absolutely. Really good stuff. Tim, thanks for coming on the show. Congrats to your son, man, for hitting the ball off the tee and running like a champion. That's really good stuff. So thanks, my friend, for coming on, and we'll definitely talk to you soon.
Paul, I appreciate it. I hope you have a great day, man.
Yeah, I will. It's going to be gorgeous weather. Go check that out. Fresno Pacific University doubleheader at 12 and 3. We're going to be talking Fresno State baseball a bit with Gabe Camarillo, of course, basketball, football, high school sports. Man, it's going to be about 20 minutes of nonstop stuff with my Gabe Camarillo, who is now doing weekend sports anchor at KMPH. But he didn't have a proper send-off. I think you guys remember a couple weeks ago. Maybe you didn't. Maybe you weren't tuned in. But the power went out about 45 minutes into my show 2 weeks ago, so I wasn't able to talk to Gabe and his new transition there to Fox 26. So we're going to be chatting about that and a little bit more on 1430 ESPN. Good conversation with Tim Slack. Does a great job. Director of Communications at Fresno Pacific University. Right there in Fresno, California. Yeah, that got a lot of ties to Fresno Pacific College. I said it again. I did it. Fresno Pacific University. It was college back then when I went there. So, looking to bring on Tim a bit more during the year. Does a great job with his play-by-play sports at the college. Speaking of great job on the radio and now transitioning to TV, Gabe Camarillo, my guy, produced my show for since the beginning. We had a lot of really good times together, talked tons about high school sports, a little bit about Fresno State back in the day. Former host of Home Field Advantage, now is a weekend sports anchor at KMPH Fox 26. Gabe, my man, how's it going on this fine? It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful Saturday today. How you doing?
I'm doing great, yeah, and there's going to be lots of things to do across Fresno today. There's some high school softball tournaments going on at Clovis West and Bullard, so I might check those out today. We got some Fresno State games out of town, the baseball team up in San Jose, the basketball team not playing, and I think that's part of the reason why Coach Hudson is no longer at Fresno State. But, I mean, it's been a long time coming, right? I just assume we're going to talk about it. It's been a long time coming because when the results aren't there year after year, we got to make a change. No matter what Hudson had going against him, and we'll obviously talk about that as well, just you have to consider this is a results-oriented business. And so Fresno State looking for better results because you want to be playing in San Diego State or New Mexico spot today in the Mountain West Championship game. That should be the goal at least.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I definitely want to start that start with the men's basketball program at Fresno State. You've talked about it all year, Gabe, and a lot of talk about Coach Hudson and the direction of the program. We all know the results from the last couple years. But, hey, what they showed in the Mountain West tournament, again, I mentioned that I usually go to the tournament, but I wasn't there this year live to watch them in Las Vegas. But they certainly showed a lot of heart, man. That game against Wyoming where they got blown out by 39 points the week before, took care of business against them. And then, again, Utah State, they're so close to beating those guys. And we know they lost to San Diego State. They had a terrible second half last night. But, you know, first, let's talk about the positives in this last week and what they did in the showing against Wyoming and then, of course, against Utah State.
Yeah, it's something to be said about the pressure of high stakes. Like, yeah, you play during the regular season and you're probably not playing your best, if that makes sense. Just like, you know, you're going through the motions. It's mid-January, mid-February. The gravitas isn't there yet. So that's why you see Fresno State lose by 39 at home to Wyoming, but then win by 4 when they play them again just a few days later because the gravitas was different. That home game against Wyoming, although it was senior day, and it was a week ago today, it's crazy to think about, it wasn't – that game and the rest of the conference play in regular season wasn't going to end their year. If they lost to Wyoming the second time, that ended their year. And not only ended the year, but ended the careers of Isaiah Hill, Isaiah Pope. You got some other seniors with 1 year of eligibility left, but not sure if they're going to stay for the new coach, guys like Leo Colomario, Don Evan Yap. So you have this regime that played for Hutt for a very long time. They stayed through multiple seasons with Hutt while others guys left. Anthony Hummel left. Jackson Mia left. So these are really Hutt soldiers. These guys were loyal to Hutt, and they wanted to play for their coach because they probably knew the writing was on the wall. Okay, I think a lot of people knew the writing was on the wall when, you know, mid-season they weren't any better than they were last season. That's just the way it is, like I said, results-oriented business. But they didn't want their coach to go down without a fight. They didn't want to go down without a fight. They heard all the negativity. They wanted to probably write a better ending, and they almost did. That last possession, man, I don't blame Isaiah Hill for trying to be the hero with 40 seconds, but I've seen that movie play out before. We saw it play out against San Jose State earlier this year. We saw it play out against Boise State a couple of years ago. Isaiah Hill can hit the game-winning threes if he asks him to. It is going to go down that last time, and then they went to overtime, and I knew they went to overtime, having only five eligible scholarship players, because the other two fouled out, Pope and Bawachi. I just had a feeling that it went to overtime, they were going to lose. They needed to win in regulation, but the fact they were in it for all 40 minutes of regulation says a lot about what this team's made of. They're made of that want to and thrive to lead teams better than they found it. They didn't start the year great, but they end the year strong.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of questions that fans had in their heads while watching those games against Utah State and then obviously the win against Wyoming, it's like, why can't they play like this all season, right? Where has that been all season?
The immediate import wasn't there for the players all season. It was there this week because they knew that if it was over, it was over. It was over for Hutt. It was over for the season. They lost one more time this week. That's it. So I think it's clear to say that this season was obviously frustrating, but the players didn't feel the immediacy that they felt this week. I hope that explains it.
No, it does. It does. But then again, we got to ask, why can't they play like that all year? And I know college basketball is a long season, and the games that I've watched the last couple of days, like the teams are leaving it all on the floor. I mean, you think about NC State, right? As a 10 seed, they're playing. They had that three-pointer to tie the game at the buzzer that I was able to watch, and then they won in overtime. So, I mean, lots of Cinderella stories can happen, especially in league tournaments, and then obviously March Madness starting next week. But I want to continue to talk about Fresno State a little bit more, Gabe. In 2021 to 2022, they went 23-13, 8-9 in the Mountain West. They got sixth place. And then we all know what happened the last two seasons. I know you've had conversations with Coach Hudson. You've been in press conferences. You know the program inside and out. So what are some specific reasons you can point to? I know the JoJo Hunter loss was huge, right? We do a lot of what ifs with that. You know, NIL is a huge issue, facilities. I mean, all the little details. But what are a couple things that you can point to for the reason why the last two seasons have not been successful?
Well, let me just tell you this, right? The sense of urgency wasn't there earlier this season, but also the talent wasn't there. So even if they did feel like we have to win this game, they just weren't as talented as their peers in the conference. I mean, you can just tell by looking at the MLS team, Fresno State got one honorable mention, and I think it was Enoch Bolachi. Everyone else, you know, had their stars. Air Force had an MLS guy, Petritis, and New Mexico has House, Mashburn, and Toppin. San Diego State, who's also played for the championship today, has Jaden Ledee, who a couple of years ago came from TCU and has torn it up this year. So everyone has their stars, and everyone typically gets them from other schools, right? Very rare do you see a case like New Mexico or Nevada where you got guys who stay multiple years and don't transfer out. It's getting very rare to keep guys multiple years. That's why what Fresno State had with Colomerio and Hill and Yap, it worked. Like, those guys stayed for multiple years, and they played for the same coach for multiple years, so they got better, and they looked good by the end of their career. You need to be able to retain players. Losing Jamal Baker Jr., losing Thaxton Senior, losing Holland, losing Campbell. A couple years ago, losing Jared Heider, losing Nate Grimes. Like, you need to keep these guys for multiple years to truly be successful. Isaiah Stevens is a great example I didn't even mention. Multi-year starter for Colorado State. That's why he's going to the NCAA tournament. So keeping players is huge. But how do you keep players? Well, in this day and age, you got to pay them. You got to pay them NIL money. And there's a reason why Baker left. You can talk about money if you want to. There's a reason why other guys leave, other schools. You need to be able to build a sufficient enough NIL pool. And I was talking to a coach at a different conference earlier this week, and he was telling me that for the Mountain West, from his viewpoint, he's in a bigger conference. It's about $1 million that you need to be competitive NIL-wise in this conference. Because you got big deals for House and Mashburn. You got big deals for some of the San Diego State guys. And Boise State, I haven't even mentioned those guys. They're going to the tournament with a Kansas transfer and a St. John's transfer. Yeah. Now, let me ask you, why you would leave Lawrence, Kansas, or New York City to go to Boise, Paul? Would you leave because you want to go to Boise, or would you leave because of something else?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Something else is what Fresno State needs to be successful. That exactly.
Yeah, and there's a quote from Coach Hudson on what he put out there, his official statement. He put, "I look back at the last 6 years, and I've taken back at how much this game has changed off the court. Between changes to name, image, and likeness rights, COVID protocols, and the transfer portal, it has been tumultuous." That's a huge word, right? Tumultuous. "I am proud of my student athletes' achievements. We produced 221 seasons, but more importantly, help create future leaders." So right there, he's like, NIL, name, image, and likeness, just so many factors off the court. Crazy.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. There's also just the bigger picture of, you know, there were certain situations that Fresno State lost in. Those were close games. And I brought it up to Hutt, and it was like poking a hunky bear. It just wasn't – because it wasn't going to go out for me, you know. Just the fact that they lost three games with a three-point lead and 10 seconds or fewer on the clock. They lost with that lead and that few time on the clock. It frustrated me. It frustrated fans because the games that they were supposed to win, they didn't. The games that they could have won, they didn't. I mean, you could argue that this last loss to Utah State was very reminiscent of other losses they've had where it was almost but not quite, and Fresno State, I think, needs to get someone who can win those close games. Think about in football, all right? Football, and some of this is about luck, too. Fresno State got pretty bad luck over Hudson Penny. You could just argue with some of the losses they had, some of the miracle threes that were hit that beat them. But Fresno State football plays well in close games more often than not. Last year, I think at one point the record to one score games was, well, like 4-1 at one point before their three-game losing streak. So when you look at football, that's the margin of victory, sometimes those close margins. So get a leader and a coach like a Jeff Tedford. Get the Tedford of basketball, someone who can revive the program, who can give you that extra oomph to win those close games. Because sometimes when it's that close between teams, it comes down to coaching. And if you get a guy who's experienced in coaching at the Division I level, if you get someone who can be the difference maker, that's going to bring more fans to games. Because I truly think if you win enough games, this fan base is so hungry for a winner in basketball, they will show up. Now, in the past, it hasn't been proven so. I understand that. Robbie Perry didn't have great crowds when the team went to the tournament. Justin Hudson didn't have great crowds when they won 23 games twice. But I just think this time will be different because everyone realizes that winning 23 games in 2 years combined, 11 wins last year and 12 wins this year, it's not good. And it's a bad look for Fresno State when they still want to go to the Big 12 and they got to compete with a Boise State athletic department that has a winner in football and basketball. They got to compete with the UNLV athletic department that has the winner in both sports. They got to compete with San Diego State, who we already know is good at both sports. So Fresno State realizes its basketball program has to pick up soon, and that takes effort on all parties. It takes effort on the athletic department to hire a good coach, and it takes effort on the fans to show up and support that coach.
Yeah, I know you hit it on the head, Gabe, when you said the fans are hungry. We are certainly hungry, and I count myself as a fan. So I think the Central Valley is waiting for a winner for sure, especially in the basketball program. So, Gabe, I want to throw out a few names, right, a few names that I've heard. I know Jackson Moore did a great job on Bachbird.com with write-ups about a few particularly interesting coaching hires that could happen for Fresno State. All right, let me throw a couple at you. Ryan Miller, he's a Creighton assistant. That's Mike Miller. You remember Mike Miller, the Florida basketball player and an NBA guy. He's his younger brother. So Ryan Miller has emerged. Quincy Pondexter, a lot of talk about him. He's currently at the University of Washington. He's assistant. We've seen him around town a couple times this year, Gabe. So Quincy's name's always been thrown around. And how about Joe Pasternak, the UCSB coach? Man, that dude can coach. Has coached Cole Anderson for the last 3 years. Shante Leggins is a really, really intriguing name out there. We know him when he played at Fresno State from 03 to 04. He's currently the Portland head coach. So that might be someone that knows Fresno State basketball, knows the Central Valley, is still pretty darn young. So he's a name to keep an eye on. David Patrick, Sacramento State head coach. And then there's usually a Vance Wahlberg talk out there, like, well, what about Coach Wahlberg? But, I mean, lots of names to choose from, Gabe. Out of that list, what do you know about a few of those guys?
Oh, I mean, Leggins has that Bulldog pedigree. Ryan Miller has that coaching pedigree. I think he'd be a home run hire, Ryan Miller, just because of his experience in the Big East, coaching at Creighton, they're number 8 in the country, I think. And I believe that would be your number one option. And whatever you have to do to pay him what he needs, I think you have to do it. Because, like I said, you're investing not just in this coach, but in the future of this program, a guy who has those connections that you're talking about. He also has some NIL money that's coming down the pipeline because of his connections. We just talked about Mike Miller. There's also a lot of talk about how the last hire was a Valley guy who didn't have prior head coaching experience. And so that kind of worries you a bit, right? Mike Miller, not necessarily a head coach in past, but he's not a Valley guy. And some believe that you need to look outside the Valley to really, you know, get someone good, to really like a Danny Sprinkle, who turned Utah State around in 1 year. That's crazy to think that Utah State was picked to finish lower than Fresno State preseason in the media polls, and they ended up winning the whole regular season title. So I think you need to get someone out of the comfort zone if you're Fresno State. Don't just get someone that you're familiar with because they used to play at your school or because they're from your area. Pick a Danny Sprinkle out there. And I know that Creighton is very well known. It's not Montana State, but I think Creighton, Ryan Miller, has the guy ready to be a head coach. The only thing that worries me about Miller is, like I said, he doesn't have any prior head coaching experience, whereas, I mean, I said if I want to hire the head for the basketball would have prior head coaching experience. Except for that, all those years at Cal, I prefer someone to have a lot of years at previous school, so that makes me think I'm going to go past that. But if Miller is going to bring an NIL and going to bring you the pedigree of the Big East, and I think you have to put the chat on him if he's entertaining you.
Yeah, I agree. That's the name that's at the top of my list there. So lots of talk about who the next guy is going to be as Fresno State men's basketball coach. Talking to Gabe Camarillo. All right, Gabe, we got about 5 minutes here. Fresno State football spring ball is here. Have you able to go to any practices yet?
Yes, I went to yesterday's practice and.
What'd you see?
Shepard's out there.
And all right.
He's come up a lot for a guy who's not even in the basketball program, but I think he is the standard bearer for what a coach should be. You know, someone who is willing to fight through anything. He was fighting through health problems and seems like he's overcome them, and we'll see how it goes this year. But I think that this team has a lot on paper to get excited about. 8 returners on offense. Now, having said that, there is an injury concern. I did not see Jacob Spomer out there. He was your starting left tackle last year. And if you remember, tore his ACL late last year. So not seeing him concerns me a bit, but everyone else seems to be healthy. Mikey Keene, healthy. Malik Sherrod, healthy and wearing number 2 now, which is interesting. I think the last running back to wear number 2 was Clifton Smith of Edison High fame, so that's awesome. If he can be like a Clifton Smith playmaker with his speed and athleticism, I think Fresno State's going to do really well. Receiver room looks stacked with Moss, Freeman, and Delana. That offense, I think, is going to look a lot like the Fresno State offense 3 years ago when Hayner was starting his second year. I think Mikey's second year is going to be very similar, especially if he sees the field better and throws those downfield shots more. I think if he does that, that opens up a whole new vertical passing game that Fresno State didn't have consistently enough last year. Defensively, this is where we need to see a star emerge. Now, linebackers, we lost LaVelle Bailey, we lost Maurice Norris. Defensive line lines, we lost Isaiah Johnson, we lost Donovan Hudson. But there's some run stoppers there. The run defense is going to be huge to monitor this spring and then fall, because we saw late last year, the run defense looking good, right? The run defense gave up a lot of yards to New Mexico and San Jose State.
That San Jose State game, yep.
Yeah. Are you telling me that you're going to lose 4 of your better run defenders in Hudson, Johnson, Bailey, and Norris? I mean, Bailey and Norris's versatility, too. Their pass coverage was really good. So who steps up? We're going to find out. I think Phoenix Jackson's a candidate to step up in the linebacker group. I think Jacob Holmes, and he's also another guy who I noticed was not dressed out in pads or not practicing, I should say. If he comes back, he led your team in sacks as a defensive tackle. Excited to see if he is there to fall to step up again. I just think this defense is the name of the game. If they fill the holes that's graduated out, this team could be just as good as last year and even better maybe.
All right, good stuff, Gabe. We got a couple more minutes here. I definitely want to get into some high school baseball, but I need to mention Fresno State baseball. That win against San Jose State to open up the series last night was awesome. Our local stars are tearing it up. You know, Jake Dixon, Noah Beal starting today, Jack Anker on Sunday. Salvador had a hit yesterday. Eddie Salvador from Memorial, Murph Gray, Madera South. He had a hit and a run score. And then Tommy Hoffe, man, that dude did everything. Homer short of a cycle, made a diving play, started a double play at first base, and then got 3 Ks in the ninth inning for his 4th save. So great stuff happening at Fresno State baseball for sure. High school baseball, Gabe, I want to ask you about 3 teams that are making noise. They're not necessarily the 3 best teams in the Central Section, but some teams that I really enjoy following and watching this year. Clovis North, Kingsburg, and then Bullard. I mentioned them in the opener. Looks like they're hitting a stride right now. Those one run losses might now turn into 2 wins. But talk to me about Clovis North, Kingsburg, and Bullard. What do you like about those squads?
Well, I like Bullard because they got healthy. Stubblefield's out there now. Keenan Gilmans is out there now. They got 4 D1 recruits in their lineup, and they got more guys who could probably play college ball next year. So I like Bullard a lot. They're talented. And their batting is their strength. Clovis North, their pitching has been really good. Davis Wilson, the freshman, has stepped up for the Broncos. And Wyatt Prieto, who hasn't pitched yet his high school career, started pitching this year. And the ERA is at .56. He's a strikeout machine. He's also a hitting machine. And you add Wyatt Prieto, who's going to play D1 college ball, who's getting heavily recruited, with Jaden Hurl, who's a 4-year varsity starter, one of the more unsung heroes in this conference. He deserves a lot more recognition because he's been doing it so consistently at the play, on the mound, the UNLV commit hurdle. Jack West. I just think this Colbus North team has been growing up over the last 2 years, and now they're ready to make noise this year. Kingsburg, with all their returning talent, the defending D3 section champions. We were curious, are they going to be the same Kingsburg team as last year that could go into track country and be the track team? Well, we found out. I mean, you were at that game when they beat Colbus West 2-0. Jensen Hirschcorn can really pitch. Holden Hirschcorn can really pitch. Houston Hirschcorn can really hit. He's got ahead of UC Davis. So I think the Hirschcorns are going to be big. Bodie Verners has been big. The names on that team, McGavin, the guys who we've seen last year step up, they're stepping up again this year. And that's the big thing. Can your stars emerge when you need them to? Kingsburg stars are, and that's why I fully believe they're the favorite to get to Division III again.
I agree. Good stuff, Gabe. And Kingsburg, they got a loaded schedule. We mentioned they beat Colbus West 2-0. Well, we got Kerman in the house right now. They're going to be matching up as well. Kerman's got a strong program. We'll be hearing from some Kerman baseball players in just a minute here. But, Gabe, good stuff as always, my friend. Congrats on your new gig. Again, I said it the last couple weeks, but it's been a pleasure talking to you on 1430 ESPN as partners. But now we're going to be talking as guests. So looking forward to the future with you and the good stuff they're going to be able to do.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
You bet. All right. That was Gabe Camarillo. Coach Coleman and Kerman Lyons, a couple players are here in the house on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report here on 1430 ESPN Fresno. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Herndon and Sierra. We've got Kerman Lyons in the house right now. Coach Jared Coleman, friend of the show. He's been on, I think, every year. I think it's, what, your third time?
Yeah, I think
third
so.
Third time. All right. Head coach of Kerman. The Lyons are currently 7-2. Got a couple seniors here as well, Adam Delgado and Gilbert Acosta. And what's cool about doing my show in the Letterman's Jacket Room, here off to the right-hand side of First String Sports. You guys know where I'm going with this. I'm like, you guys got your Letterman's jacket yet? They're like, no, but I'm going to buy one right now. Huh? Was that you? Was that you, Adam?
Yeah.
You're going to buy it?
Definitely going to get one after this. Yeah.
Get one. Look at that. All right, commission. First String Sports, I got to get some commission here. So, yeah, welcome to the show, guys. Glad to have you here. What do you guys got going on the Saturday, man? It's going to be a gorgeous day. So no practice or nothing, day off, right, mm-hmm. Coach?
Yes, sir.
But what do you got going? I see here. Your sons, right?
Yeah, I got my kids over here. So my son has a couple games at Granite Park a little bit later, so they're coming along for the ride. But after that, not much. It's games at 2 and 6. It's baseball all the time. I don't know about these guys. They like to hang out a lot or do things. But
yeah, what Gilbert, what are you guys doing rest of the day?
I don't think much. Maybe we'll go support Coleman's son.
All right. There it is right there. Byron Letterman's jacket right here, First String Sports, and go support Coach's son. Awesome. What about you, Adam?
I'm actually going to go to Topgolf later in San Jose. Oh. Yeah.
In San Jose? So you're making the trip?
Yeah.
Can you rip it, like, what, 250? What do you think?
Probably closer to 300.
Oh,
come on.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. Do you have more like a baseball swing, right, for golf? You just kind of run up Happy Gilmore style, or what do you?
Yeah, definitely just try to hit the ball as far as I can.
That's right. If you go to top.
Hard in case you hit it.
Yeah, that's right, in case you hit it. All right, let's talk about your season so far. As I mentioned, you guys are 7-2. You guys beat Sierra Pacific. Was that on Thursday or was that yesterday?
Thursday.
That was Thursday. Okay, Delgado went 3 innings, had a couple Ks, got the win. Gilbert, he went 1-for-2, had a run at an RBI. So, Coach, talk about the performances of the team and then what these guys did on the field.
So, the first inning was awesome for us. I mean, we batted around. We got 5 runs in the first. So that was nice because our team this year, we've kind of joked we're like the Kerman lineouts. We get guys in scoring position, and we line out 5-6 times a game. It's pretty crazy, but we just keep telling them to keep swinging the bat. I mean, that's all they can do. And we line out to left, center, right, short, doesn't matter where. And it seems to always come up with runners in scoring position and 2 outs. Gilbert came up after we had a leadoff walk. We had a freshman lay a bunt down, beat it out. Kid is crazy fast. And then Gilbert came up, got a base hit, loaded the bases, and then after that we got some sacrifice flies and pass balls, and things went our way, and a couple more hits. And so it was a really good first inning for us. And then Adam, after the first inning of pitching for that kid, came off the mound. He was a little bit sick, and he was getting sick behind the dugout. And one of the coaches came up and said, "I don't know if you know, but Adam's throwing up behind the dugout." And I said, "Oh, well, it looks like we're going to have to maybe pull him a little bit early." And the fact that we got, you know, the six runs in the first two innings, we could conserve his arm and be careful with it. Because, you know, I mean, midseason games and everything like that are great, but we're really trying to keep fresh to get to the playoffs, because we know once we get there, the run is it's got to be deep. So,
and I've noticed that this year, Coach, you've had a lot of your kids throw three innings, one game, four innings. You're not stretching guys out early. I mean, that's definitely part of the plan, right?
Yeah,
trying not to.
Definitely. And now we've got Adrian Torres back from basketball, and he got his first inning in, so it was good to get his feet wet in that game. But another guy that's been fantastic out of the bullpen is Aiden Olivares. He's got a .49 ERA this year out of the bullpen, and you know, when he comes in the game, I mean, you feel very comfortable. Yeah. They got to earn the runs against him. So
Adam, what was working on the mound? Obviously, you had to get through a couple things, right? And then it becomes physical, but then it becomes a mental game. But what was working on the mound for you against Sierra Pacific?
I feel like all my pitches really were working on Thursday, but really my changeup. These last two starts, actually, my changeup has been really on.
How do you throw your changeup? How do you grip it?
I throw a circle change, so my middle finger and my ring finger, like a grip, like a two-seam, and then circle my thumb and pointer finger, and then just throw it like a fastball.
Exactly. That's the way to do it, man. Circle changes, and against the right-handed hitters, you get that down and in, that's throwing them a lot. And you got a battery mate right here?
Yeah, Gilbert's been catching me since.
So, Gilbert, when we'll get into who calls the pitches in a minute here, but you've been catching this guy for a while, right? So what's it like to have him on the mound when you could throw any pitches at any count?
It's great knowing that he can get anything over the plate for a strike or a ball, wherever you want.
Can you hear him?
Yeah.
You can hear him?
Okay. Yeah.
All right, good. He's right next to me.
But.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's the best pitch do you think Adam throws?
When it's on, his curveball. It could be loopy. It could be like a slider if he wants it to. It's whatever he needs.
Are you you throw over the top? Are you kind of a three-quarters guy? You straight
I'd
over the top?
A little, like three-quarters, I'd say.
About three-quarters? Yeah. You agree with that, Coach?
Yeah. The first batter, he threw it a little firm with two strikes. It got hit to left field. So I don't know about that one. But.
And so what do you enjoy most, Gilbert, about catching?
I've caught him for a long time, so I feel like our chemistry is pretty good. Like, we're pretty much in the same mind sometimes.
When you set up inside and outside, like, does he do a good job of getting the ball inside on right-handed hitters and then setting up for that curveball? You mentioned his curveball is probably his best pitch, his out pitch. But when you're setting guys up, you just kind of know the sequence, right? You just kind of in tune with him. Like, can you think of anything specific, like in a game or maybe in a practice where that really shines?
I wouldn't say, well, Bakersfield Christian wasn't a very good example because – But he set his two-seam up. He set his two-seam up really good.
Yeah.
On some. He brings it in, and then his curveball is down and away.
Okay. Yeah. The big. Now I'm going to mention that in just a second. Yeah. We'll talk about the schedule that you've set up this year, Coach. So, who's calling pitches? You're calling pitches, right?
Yeah. I've been calling pitches with these guys for a while, and they really do trust me. And honestly, I feel like it's one of those. I've talked to a couple people this year about it, and. You know, whenever the moment gets hard, these guys deliver, and it's part of the reason why we've had so much success over the past couple of years. It seems like when guys get on base, they buckle down and do a fantastic job and hit the spots when needed. It's a good mentality, and this guy especially is one of the best. Last year, we didn't really play clean behind him much, and it put him in a hole a lot of the times. But he'll just get right back up on the mound and throw another pitch, and that kind of leadership mentality. Is what's part of the reason why we've been successful for a while. So.
Are both these guys are 4-year varsity guys?
Yes, they've been with us through everything. Yeah. They've been with us losing that section championship by one to Ridgeview, the undefeated season last year, having 11 healthy guys at one point with three freshmen up that are now sophomores making an impact. So they've been through everything. It's one of the most complete groups that we've had in a 4-year run. I have to say this year, as a coach, the comfort level of these guys, it's just different. than in years past. You know, there's guys at the plate, they're not fazed by anything. And I think that's pretty special because we've seen pretty much everyone's best so far.
I bet. Yeah. How long have you guys played together? I think you mentioned you used to play against each other.
Yeah.
Right. So talk about that.
I'm like from Fresno. I actually live in Fresno, on the edge of Fresno, and I used to play for Bullard and Fresno Sun Sox. So we used to play each other like at Granite Park when we were like 10, 9 years old. And I got to be honest, Gilbert, we won most of those games.
True story.
I'm going to agree with that.
All right. What do you remember about each other back then? Like, did you guys, like, obviously you're playing against each other, but what do you remember, Gilbert, about him, about Adam?
That Adam was always the guy.
He was the dude, huh? Everybody knew where he was, right? Oh, where he was on the field.
Yeah.
What do you remember about him?
I just knew that at any point he could just hit a bomb.
Yeah?
Yeah, he would just get up there, just take some hacks, and he would just spray the ball. Or not really spray the ball over, but big pool guy.
Better now.
Yeah. Better now. Improving. So when did you guys – so you guys entered Kerman, obviously, as freshmen, right? Like, when did you guys realize that you were going to be teammates for 4 years? When did you – you're going to Kerman? Like, was there a moment there?
There was a – after – we didn't have our eighth grade season, so we really just played our seventh grade season. Mm-hmm. It was straight from seventh to high school. And we pretty much knew we were dedicated to making it on our freshman year.
Yeah. Was it kind of a no-brainer, Coach, to pull those guys up
it
to varsity
easy.
As a freshman?
Yeah, it was an easy move. I think Gilbert caught almost every single game his freshman year. He's caught almost every game the last 4 years. He's just done a fantastic job for us. And Adam, you just know, you see some of those kids, they just have it, and they've always been winners. So,
has there ever been a moment where you guys, like, when you play together for 4 years, right, you got to have a lot of ups and a lot of downs. You guys ever got mad at each other, like, come on, man, you got to hit your spots, or come on, man, you got to drive in this run? Been any moments like that with you guys?
The most recent was yesterday. We got a little talkative to each other during our game at practice.
Yeah, we got
competitive. Oh, during that hitting game you guys were telling me about.
It was definitely competitive. There might have been a little trash talk, but, you know, it was good competitive fun. So.
But you put them on opposite teams for
a
reason?
Oh, yeah, they got to pick teams and everything, and so there was a point system, and, you know, Adam picked a little bit more of a defensive team, and I think it might have paid off because they ended up walking it off.
Who walked it off?
My team right here.
Your team?
Yeah.
So what was the game? Like, what, you get 4 points for a homer, three for a triple?
Well, we didn't do triple because there's no base runner, so we just did a double was two and a single was one, or if somebody made an error, that was a point for the other side. And Delgado had the idea to have the game, and it was great for a Friday practice after a game. Kids enjoyed it, got the machine out there, get five swings each, and whatever the point system was after that, you know, we did a couple rounds, and it was a lot of fun.
Who hits the most bombs in practice?
Definitely huh? Gilbert.
Gilbert? Yeah. Gilbert, what's the farthest? Now, Kerman, from what I remember, Kerman, the yard used to play pretty big. So
yes.
I know the winds can get a little crazy. But, Gilbert, what's the farthest home run you think you've ever hit in a practice or in a game? Can you remember?
It's got to be yesterday.
What? Yeah, you got it up in the stream or what?
Oh, there was no wind. It was dry. It was.
We had to tell the softball players to look out. So it definitely landed in the middle of the softball field. But, you know, speaking of the wind, at Thursday, the winds were crazy blowing in. So that definitely was something our outfielders played great. Anybody that hasn't ever played there, it definitely affected the game a little bit. But, yeah, yesterday, like a day like yesterday, the ball was just jumping off the bat. So
let's get into your season a little bit more, Coach. So you mentioned the Sierra Pacific 6-0 win, which is a league game, which is pretty crazy. I know Bullard played a league game against San Joaquin Memorial yesterday. So before that, you played Tulare Western, 6-0 win, a 3-game winning streak. You beat Mission Oak, who's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
They're pretty scrappy. They lost, or Kerman beat them 5-3. But before that, you played Bakersfield Christian and then Clovis North, 8-5 loss to Bakersfield Christians, who could very well be with the top team in the Central Section. They got some arms. They got some dudes. And then Clovis North, they lost 3-1. Talk about those games and the competition level, right? I mean, that's D1. That's high D1 level.
So in those two losses, I mean, we've given up 17 runs in this year, and we give up 11 runs in those two games. And at Bakersfield Christian, they're a great team. I mean, if you make a mistake, they're going to make you pay. And we had two 50-50 balls in the outfield that tipped off gloves. I think if we make those two catches, that game might have been a different outcome. It led to a couple runs. Like Gilbert was kind of throwing Adam under the bus. He didn't have his cleanest game against Bakersfield Christian, but still, even in not his cleanest game, we were still in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Olivares came in and threw a great, I think, three innings after that, two or three innings. But that was one of those games where, I mean, we saw Brassfield right away. I mean, you know, and it was great to see because I don't think these kids have ever experienced that. There's 25 guys behind home plate, you know, with radar guns, you know, and we got two runs and four hits on them in the first inning. A couple of them, you know, hit off third base, which is rare. But, you know, we had a sophomore get a line drive to left on a curveball with two strikes, and we had a junior, Olivares, line drive up the middle with bases loaded. So it wasn't, you know, we had some fortunate things happen, but they had good at-bats. I mean, you have a guy that throws the way he does and make him throw 33 pitches in the first inning.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want. And the kids did a fantastic job in that game. And then North, that game was 0-0 under the sixth.
Wow.
A guy that Gio Gastelum, we lost him last year after the first four games to a rare cartilage issue in his arm. And he has been a huge addition on the mound and with his bat. The kid's been in the cleanup hole. He's been hitting well for us. And that game, we had a couple unfortunate things happen. And I felt like we hit the ball very hard that game. Again, it was just right at people.
The Kerman lineouts?
The lineouts. And I think the way that game started, the rally for North, they got a double off the end of the bat. And it was just one of those games. They got the double off the end of the bat, and our lineouts just weren't finding anything. So
Bakersfield Christian was at their place.
Yes.
Clovis North was
at home.
Them at home.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a tournament, so you get placed wherever you get placed. We had to go to Bakersfield two games in a row, which was pretty crazy, and then Tulare the next week. But, you know, these kids, they went to the coast this year. It's the most we've traveled. The schedule this year was this way because of we all know how the playoffs are going to be. And we all know where we're going to be placed. And so
spring break, you guys are playing in the Easter Classic, mm-hmm. right? And you know your matchups. Mm-hmm. Who do you got?
We got Davis out of Sacramento, who's a very good team. They're perennially really good up there. And then we got Hoover on Monday. So Davis and Hoover back-to-back. And then on Tuesday, we play Frontier. Frontier is one of the best teams in the section. They've had a great start to the year. And then depending on how everything goes, either you play in the championship after three games or you play Clovis East in game four. So, I mean, we've played track schools, SYO schools. It doesn't matter. These kids are ready for whatever is going to be thrown at them.
Well, I've been following your program for a while, Coach, and, you know, obviously you talked about that undefeated season until the playoffs was a really special year. But I think this schedule is probably your toughest ever. Would you agree?
Yep.
And I'm looking at league, right? I'm looking at league. So you got Sierra Pacific, who's tough. You guys already beat them, but you got Union, Central Valley Christian, and Kingsburg.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gauntlet.
Yep.
It's a gauntlet right there. I mean, I think certainly whoever emerges from league as champion,
yep.
I mean, you can maybe even have a three-way tie for a champion. I mean, you never know. Those mm-hmm. those teams are really good. What are those teams? What types of problems do those teams present?
Kingsburg has, I mean, they almost have a junior college pitching staff. I mean, they've got Akeesian, they've got both Hirschkorns, the other Hirschkorn. I don't know if he starts as much. I think he comes in relief more. They've got an arsenal on the mound. But, you know, the one way I feel like this year, if anything, I think our hitters are more comfortable. I think it's going to be one of those games where, you know, whoever plays the cleanest – and pitchers are throwing the most strikes is going to come out with a win. I think it's a great matchup. I know a lot of people are picking Kingsburg, and rightfully so. They won league last year pretty handily. But I feel like these guys this year, we might be the one team that can give them a run for their money.
I love it. I love it. And, again, like last year, I believe maybe the last few years, playing each of those teams three times mm-hmm. during league. That's awesome.
And then you got CVC. I mean, you got Anchor's brother over there. And
yeah.
They got a new guy, a kid that came in this year. His name's Simon. He's apparently a mid-80s guy from Arizona. And they got Crick, which is a pretty good lefty. So, I mean, they're pretty solid on the mound as well. So
yeah. And you guys got them, looks like April 9th and 10th.
We have them actually next Tuesday.
And next Tuesday? Well,
yeah.
I'm going to scroll up a little bit. Oh, there it is, next Tuesday. All right. Adam and Gilbert, what do you guys look forward to when you're playing against these high-level teams, man? Just the competition. You guys want to see how you stack up against the best of the best, right? Is that how you guys look at it?
Yeah. The best part is the closer games, it gets everybody into it. The adrenaline, the atmosphere, it makes everything so much better.
Yeah, Adam, what do you love about competing against those types of schools?
You just know that it's going to be a close game every time we play them. And then even the fans get really into it. And that's when we play our best, is when we have something to play for, like a chip on our shoulder to play for. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I didn't put this in my notes, but I reminded myself right now, I need to ask you about that game-winning touchdown catch, because Adam, you're a stud athlete. Mentioned you a lot here on the show. We know Kerman's great run through the playoffs. Coach Jenkins, man, that guy is awesome. I love him. I'd run through a wall for that guy. But you had a game-winning touchdown catch at Mission Prep.
Yeah, it was actually at Cal Poly. Yeah, it was a semifinal game, Division III. And yeah, I actually had 3 touchdowns that game and got the game winner in overtime.
Describe that game winner. First of all, I think it was like the 8-yard line or a little bit farther back?
Maybe around there. Around it was inside the 10.
Okay. What was the play call?
McCoy, our offensive coordinator, I think it was like second or third down, and we called the timeout. We're just on the sideline, and he just asked me what I thought about the corner over there, and I was like, just throw me one up. So then he called a fade, and then Adrian Torres, he's on the baseball team too, our quarterback, he threw me a great ball, and then I was just able to make a play.
And what was your reaction? Were you just going crazy?
Yeah, there's actually a video. I don't know who recorded it, but yeah, our whole team stormed on the field, and we were just screaming, jumping up and down, because that was the first time we've ever been to Valley, so it meant a lot to us.
That was awesome. Coach, I want to ask you this question. Kerman, it's just pretty special town, mm-hmm. right? You're an alum of the school.
Yep.
It's still a one school town. Mm-hmm. Keep your fingers crossed, right?
Yep.
About that, but what's it mean, to have athletes like Adam, right? And like Gilbert, guys that are 4-year guys are committed to the school, that support each other. What's the atmosphere like at Kerman? What do you love about Kerman High?
Honestly, I just love the fact that we can come to practice and it's not business-like. And we can have a good time, but they know how we coach and everything, and they know when to reel it back a little bit or get on the guys the most. But honestly, the support, and you talk about being from the town, we've had great crowds so far this year.
Yeah.
It's almost been like playoff games at some of our games so far, and the support we get is unmatched. But these guys mean a lot to the program, mean a lot to me. They're kind of like my second family. We haven't had them over yet. We're supposed to have them over. We have the team over a couple times a year, and they've been getting on me for not having them over yet. But it'll happen soon. We come over and they play, basketball, whatever. Spike ball is the new craze right now. They're all over spike ball, and they just have a good time with one another. It's such a great group. It's a special group. And it's definitely one of the most complete groups we've ever had.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Again, you guys are 7-2 on the season. Talking with Kerman, Coach Jared Coleman. I want to ask you, Coach. I don't know if I've asked you this before, but you got a favorite baseball movie?
Honestly, a favorite baseball movie. I'm not like movie buff guy, but I mean, if there is one, I always like the Field of Dreams. I mean, I just like that one. I feel like it's that small town kind of vibe, and the one place that reminds me of that kind of field is whenever we go, I always talk about it, is playing at Emmanuel. They got the field in the background and everything. It's always been a field that it reminds me of that movie. We haven't watched it in a long time, but it's one of those movies. It's just, it goes back to the roots of baseball and what it means to small towns and
yeah,
things like
to
that.
Love the game. Yeah, Emmanuel's got the complex right mm-hmm. there. They got the four fields, the 2 softball and the 2 baseball, and it's literally in the middle of an orchard.
Mm-hmm.
Literally in the middle. It's like Field of Dreams. Good stuff. How about you guys? You guys got a favorite baseball or sports movie? I'll open it up to that. How about a favorite sports movie or specifically a baseball movie? No?
Baseball movie?
Yeah.
You guys haven't seen?
I don't really have a favorite anyway.
Because I just think of the classics, right? You mentioned it, Field of Dreams, Major League is a favorite, right? The Sandlot. You guys have seen The Sandlot, right?
Natural.
Yeah. The Natural.
Nah, my favorite is probably Major League.
Major League?
Major League, yeah.
That makes sense.
I don't know. Yeah, Moneyball's a pretty good
movie. There you go. Gilbert's coming out. All right, Moneyball. That's a good one. How about favorite baseball players? Coach, how about you?
Baseball players? I was a catcher, so, it's got to be Posey. I love the Giants, so it's got to be Buster Posey. That guy just played the game the right way. Never had a bad attitude. And he was a great catcher to his pitchers. I mean, he knew when to go up and talk to him. Just watching him, he was a very good student of the game all the time. So
he's kind of an all business guy.
Yeah.
Right. Like you want to know a little bit more about his personality. I remember him at Florida State. Right.
Yeah.
Playing for Florida State. Right. And then we get drafted.
And he was a shortstop as well, I think.
He was. Mm-hmm. I think he pitched a little bit too, maybe, if I'm not wrong. But yeah, I respect Buster Posey. He's a great player. How about you guys?
Mike Trout's a pretty obvious one. And Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper just plays with so much attitude and just passion.
Mike Trout, hoping for a healthy season, man. Mm. Come on, Mike. Let's go. Yeah, and I don't know. Coach might remember this. Remember when Bryce Harper first came up, right? Mm-hmm. We saw him on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
I believe he graduated high school early, went to junior college for a year, when it was supposed to be his senior year, and then, you know, went number one. But, you know, he's up in the major leagues. Remember, he made, I think it was Cole Hamels of the Phillies. He stole home. Like, it was the first and third situation. Cole Hamels is left-handed, and Cole Hamels tried to pick the guy off first, and Bryce Harper stole home. And he didn't care. But all the players were super pissed at him because they're like, oh, you got to respect the game a little bit more. But we're like, heck no, that's Bryce Harper, man. He just showed you guys up. That's
He's number one.
He's number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one thing I remember about Bryce Harper. How about for you, Adam?
Well, I'm a Giants fan too, so got to say Brandon Crawford. Just growing up, watching him play. Especially defensively, he's just the smoothest out there. So
very smooth, and he don't look right. He don't look right in a Cardinals uniform.
No, definitely
I was gonna
not.
Say he don't look right.
Wish he would have retired a Giant.
Should have.
Speaking of defense, this group this year, they've made 5 errors in 9 games so far. So that's part of our success this year is the fact that teams have to earn it against us. So
no pitching and defense.
Had to put that out there. I couldn't forget that one.
5 errors in 9 games. Good stuff. All right. Thank you, guys. That's Coach Jarrett Coleman. Lions are currently 7-2. Seniors Adam Delgado and Gilbert Acosta. Thanks for coming on the show, guys. That was a lot of fun. Good luck the rest of the year.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. Lots of good stuff. All right. Next, we're going to turn our attention to Bullard Athletic Director Brandon Gilbert. We'll be talking about, I don't know, realignment, lights at Bullard, the field at Bullard, tons of good stuff coming up on 1430 ESPN. Thank you guys for listening to Central Valley Sports Report. Hour and a half into the program. Of course, that's a song from the great Saturday Night Live skit with Will Ferrell, more cowbell, Christopher Walken, all-time classic, Fear the Reaper. Just a really good conversation with Coach Jarrett Coleman for Kerman. God, I mean, for those guys to play a Division I type schedule, right? You mentioned the game against Clovis North that they lost 3-1, said it was 0-0 entering the sixth. Bakersfield Christian, things didn't go their way, but they saw their D1 guy, big old lefty, headed to TCU. We all rooted for them that year. They were 28-0 2 years ago, bumped up to Division II, lost in the first round, and it was to the St. Joseph team that got a bunch of guys eligible, and they certainly weren't a 16 seed. And so they lost in that first round, but that was absolutely devastating. That was, you know, one of those bad parts about competitive equity. So anyway, but they got a really good team this year. Looking forward to following them the rest of the year. So thanks to those guys for coming on the show live here to First String Sports. And got Brandon Gilbert here, the Bullard High Athletic Director. I've known Brandon for a while, had some really good conversations over the years. We share a lot in common. Right? Yes, a lot in common. Yes. We might be getting into some fun talk at the end of this talk here. But Brandon, first of all, I know today's a busy day. You're at the softball tournament, so thanks for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a pleasure to come in here and talk high school sports with you.
What's going on at softball? You guys running the tournament over there?
Yeah, Central. It's Central's tournament, and so we kind of co-host with them. And so we got 8 teams that are over at Bullard yesterday and today, and some really good softball going on out there. And we got like 4 different just came from our first game, and we had a nice win over a good Menachi team, and heading back at 1 we play St. Joe's, and they got a really good team too, so should be some good softball.
You brought me a burrito.
Yep,
so they're selling burritos
from our friends over at the meetup. can't beat it.
All right, good plug right there, good stuff.
So
softball team, you know, we did, you know, the last couple of years Coach Maxey is a legend. How's softball going this year so far?
You know, It's going pretty well so far. You know, we got a really good mix of girls. You know, we're a little bit senior heavy this year, but we've got freshmen playing and sophomores and juniors and great group of kids. You know, just Coach Maxie, you know, I can't speak enough about the job she does year in and year out with our softball program, and they're just really fun to watch. One of my favorite sports to watch for sure.
And I've mentioned this in the past, and we'll be getting to more softball as the season goes on, but high-level softball is so fun to watch. I mean, if you haven't been to a softball game in a while, go check it out. Obviously, everything's shorter, 60 feet, right, to the bases, and everything is just super fast. And, yeah, those girls, I'm just impressed. They can, when high-level softball is being played, it's super intense.
Well, think about it. Think about how quick and how skilled you have to be to take a hot shot at third base and get that thing over to first really quickly. And these girls, I'm amazed to see the skill level from these girls. It's unbelievable.
And baseball. Baseball yesterday had a pretty special day, right? Mike Noakes Day. Is that the first year they've done Mike Noakes?
Yeah, that was just something they wanted to do this year and to honor Coach, and it was a great opportunity to have a lot of alumni out, and we had a ton of old players out yesterday and all kind of came out on the field for the national anthem and all got to see Coach and watch us play. And so it was a fun community/alumni event for sure.
And he is, when you think Bullard baseball, that's one of the first names, if not the first name, that should pop into everybody's mind. And just talk about his legacy. You're a grad of the school as well, so you remember those days as well. But talk about him and what he means to baseball in the Central Valley.
Yeah, just his approach, his hard-nosed approach to the game, and obviously the success they had over the years. And you know, I don't mention Bullard baseball without, you know, mentioning Coach Noakes. I mean, you know, his name, the field's named after him. You know, every time someone comes out, you're playing on Mike Noakes Field. And just a great guy. And you know, I was fortunate. I wasn't a baseball player in high school, but I was fortunate to be a TA in his class, and those were always so I have my own stories. I may not have baseball stories, but I have those types of stories with Coach. And you know, and since I've been AD, I've had a good relationship with him, and he's always just a pleasure to talk to. And it's really nice having him out at the field the last few years and having him help out, and great for our kids to experience that. And you know, so yeah, he means the world to us at Bullard.
And you know, he's from that era of the hard-nosed type coaches that, right? I mean, you think of like Coach Simon. I mean, the nicest guy ever at Clovis High, but just the era, you know, you think Clovis High baseball and Coach Patrick, like
Absolutely. Those
types of coaches, right, are getting older in age, and we need to honor those guys.
100%, yeah, because you know, every few years you kind of lose a generation of coaches, and you know, and the hope is that we're replacing them with young coaches that are going to stick it out that long. I don't know that I'm as optimistic about that. Yeah. It's the demands of the job are different now, and the year-round stuff, and you know, so those guys were special, and you know, they didn't just coach one sport.
Yeah,
you know, he coached football for a lot of years too, and a lot of those guys in that era coached multiple sports. And I know even Coach Donald, when he was, you know, before he coached, you know, freshman football while he was a varsity baseball coach. So just a different era, and guys enjoyed coaching multiple sports and being around different kids. And then that's something that's, yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher to replace that type of, you know, guy.
Yeah. And I think the year round sports maybe has something to do with it, but yeah, that was just a different time. Right. And you know, you weren't battling other coaches for during the summer as well. It's just kind of a different era.
Yeah. It's, I mean, in a way, I guess it's great because, you know, kids are occupied, but as an AD, you know, I would love to be seeing kids playing more, you know, two sports, you know, three sports would be unbelievable. It's really rare that we get a three sport varsity athlete these days. Two sports, you know.
It's usually football, baseball, right? Those are the two sports. And when you bleed, when you throw basketball or even wrestling, a few guys do that. But it's tough because they overlap.
It's hard. I mean, I know they're able to do it in the smaller communities, and it's great to see. You know, obviously we get a lot of cross-country track kids, and we get a lot of water polo swim kids. And not to just kind of minimize that, because you're still playing two sports, and that's tough.
Yeah.
But those sports go a little bit more hand-in-hand. But, yeah. Baseball, football, you know, I think that's one I'd definitely like to see more of at our school. And even football, basketball, and you know, soccer. I mean, you know, we used to have kids that would go that played football, soccer, and baseball.
Yeah.
And now, it's hard. It's hard. You almost have to be I think nowadays to have a kid who plays, let's just say football and basketball, if he's a kid who has to work really hard to get on the field or on the court, it's really hard for that type of kid. Now, if you've got a freak, if you've got a Division I football player, well, he can probably go out on the basketball floor and help you just by showing up, you know,
yeah,
when football's over. But we don't have a lot of those kids running around, you know. So I don't know what the answer is. I just would love to see kids playing more sports.
Yeah, that seems to be an issue in the specialization too, like I mentioned, and summer, like what do? You go to a 7-on-7 deal, or you know, you got a basketball game that, you know, you could be a fringe guy, right? You mm-hmm. mentioned there's not too many of these super stud athletes anymore out there. So you got a fringe guy, it's like, you know, you don't want a coach to hold something against you as well. I mean, I'm not saying that happens, you know, everywhere, but that could be an issue with some programs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to think that our coaches, you know, are open to kids playing multiple sports, and I think they are. But what do you tell a kid who wants to play, let's say, football and basketball, but really needs to work really hard to get on the floor
sure.
at basketball?
Sure.
You know, as a coach, as a basketball coach, what do you say to him? Like, are you honest and say, you know, you probably need to play all summer with us
yeah.
to be good enough to play this year? Or do you say, go play football and we'll hope it works out? It's hard, you know, and kids just have to, and parents have to make that decision. And but ultimately, I think it's beneficial. Like, being a part of as many programs as possible is a good thing. And, you know, as I'm sitting here among all these Letterman jackets, what's what's better than graduating with, you know, a yeah, loaded up Letterman jacket,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. The cool kid on campus. Yeah. Talking with Brandon Gilbert. We're going to hit a break right now. We're going to be talking about, there's a big vote coming up, I think, in early April. There's some decisions going to be made about the way playoffs for football are going to look. Really excited about hearing some potential. So we'll take a couple-minute break. We'll be talking with Brandon Gilbert, continuing our conversation on 1430 ESPN. Here at First String Sports, talking with Bullard High Athletic Director Brandon Gilbert. So, Brandon, there's going to be a vote in early April. You guys are discussing. I believe you're the league representative for the CMAC. Right?
Not anymore. No, it's now Hector Verduzco and Ed Edison. We rotate every 2 years.
So okay.
I served my term.
You served your term.
Yeah, proudly served my term.
You should get a little button.
Yeah,
a little
exactly.
something on your Letterman's jacket
right,
about that.
Right.
All right, so Division I playoffs might look a little bit different next year.
Yeah.
Like what's on the docket?
For football.
Football.
So what's being discussed is a 16-team Division I, but it would be split into 2/8. So I guess the best way to think about it is we'd put 16 teams in D1 for football, you know, seeded 1 to 16. But 1 through 8 would be in Division 1A, I believe, or 1AA. I always get those confused.
I do, too. But I don't know why they do that.
Seeds 1 through 8 would be in 1A or 1AA, and then seeds basically 9 through 16 would be in the other one. So we basically be adding a section championship in football, and we're able to do that because there is an open bowl slot. So we would qualify that school for the bowl game.
Oh wow!
For the state bowl game. So
okay.
You know, I think the rationale behind it is, you know, you've got schools that qualify for that top 16 that are you know. I mean, let's face it, an 11 seed is probably not going to – it's going to be tough against,
yep.
you know, one of the top seeds. So it creates a little bit more of a competitive bracket right there in the middle of Division I and II. I think, you know, when you see, you know, some of these quote-unquote Division I schools, which that's a whole other conversation.
Sure.
But when they trickle down and play a quote-unquote Division III or Division II type school, sometimes there's a disparity there. Although you've seen, you know, CVC and Kingsburg be super competitive with those schools the last couple of years. But so I think just creating that one bracket there in the middle to make things more competitive.
Well, I think just off the top of my head, like let's say the second eight, like that number 16 team, which would have no shot against the number one team if it was a full 16, now they got a pretty darn good shot at beating the number one.
I think, yeah, if you're looking at it in terms of I guess one, you know, 9 through 16 or
yeah.
or 1 through 8 in this new bracket, I think you're looking at a lot of competitive games. And I think that 16 could knock off the 9, so to speak. Or
sure.
the 8, the 1, you know, the 9, 8 and the 1. So yeah, I mean it's exciting, and if we can get one more Central Section team into a state bowl game, then, you know, good for us, right?
So is that going to be presented with all the athletic directors, and then there's a big vote with everybody that shows up? How's that work?
So the way that works is we have in our central section, we have what's called the board of managers. So every league gets basically two votes, two reps, two votes. And so everything that we do in our section is governed by the board of managers.
Yeah.
I know people sometimes get angry about things and they want to blame our commissioner, and he's not making policy. We're making policy. And so what'll happen is every league will discuss it. And usually Ryan or Matt will come out to our leagues and present all the information, and ADs can ask questions. Then we'll come back, and as a league, we'll vote. So, you know, however many, you know, let's say there's six schools in our league right now, we'll vote on how we want our vote to go with the board of managers. So everybody's got an input, you know, some way, shape, or form. And then we'll bring it all together for, you know, all of our schools and all of our leagues to vote on. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's going to be interesting. I think it's beneficial for the large schools and the big schools. So I think this is something that's got a reasonable chance to pass.
I like it. I like it for a lot of reasons that you said. I think there's definitely like a top tier 1 through 8 in football. Is definitely, I think with basketball this year, I think there were the three schools, right, in North and West and St. Joseph were the tier, right? And we figured one of those schools would win it. It was Clovis North this year. You guys had a really good run in basketball.
Yeah,
right? The state playoffs.
We
talk
did.
About that. You were able to go to the Santa Cruz game.
Yeah, I went to all of them. It's fun when you, you know, unfortunately your season comes, your second season comes to an end in the playoffs. And, but when you know you've qualified for state, if you can kind of turn it around and get the kids bought back in.
Cause there's like with you, was there a week and a half wait between when you lost to East to
about 10 days,
10
yeah,
days.
About 10 days. Yeah. We lost in the quarterfinals. And so, you know, our coaching staff and Coach Amundson did a great job getting the kids, you know, excited about it again. And we won 3 games, and it's a tough deal because, you know, for anybody that's done it knows what I'm talking about, but you find out Sunday afternoon and you got to turn around and play on Tuesday. And if you're traveling, you know, that's, you got to make a lot of arrangements.
Sure.
And I think that Monday was a holiday if I'm not mistaken. And if you're going like a long way away, I know Coach Amundson always likes to go the night before so the kids have fresh legs. So now you're showing up Monday morning and you got to find hotels for that night. And luckily for us, our district goal two team downtown was really, really supportive and really kick butt getting all those arrangements made. But it was a fun run. And we, you know, we ran into a Santa Cruz team where a lot of that city was in that gym night. It was standing room only, and there was a lot of people there. I got there about an hour early, and it was 3/4 full. And they had 3 bigs that were solid and really good players. And so we had our chances, you know, within the last minute, and just couldn't quite pull it off. But really proud of the kids, proud of our coaching staff. It's just a really fun season.
And one game on the buzzer, and then I think the next game was an overtime win, right?
Double overtime.
Win.
Justin Siena up at Napa. Yeah, that was 2 overtimes.
Yeah. Great road wins for Bullard. Talking with Brandon Gilbert, the athletic director. We got about 5 more minutes. So I definitely want to hit on stadiums in Fresno Unified, right? Mm-hmm. You guys share stadiums. Mm-hmm. You never had a home, quote unquote, home stadium. I guess you call it McLean, right? The stadium, or it's most of your home games are there.
Yeah, we play some at Radcliffe and McLean, and then, you know, we don't necessarily, but our other district schools use Sunnyside. Yeah.
Okay. So, what have you heard from Fresno Unified about a stadium?
You know, I don't know. It's up in the air. You know, I think that'd be a better question for our facilities people at Fresno Unified. I think there's a lot of challenges. I think it'd be great, number one, if we could do it. I think it would really help our communities to be able to come to the school their child actually goes to watch a football game.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of challenges. I mean, aside from money, right? That's a big one. But, you know, our schools were not, they were built a long time ago. They weren't built on big footprints. So, you know, you've got parking issues. You've got space issues. You've got neighbors issues. You know, are the neighbors going to fight it? Because, you know, they're going to get a say in it too. So I think it's, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, let's slap our five schools that don't have them yeah. with stadiums and let's go. But it's, you know, that's definitely above my pay grade. And, you know, I'd love one, but, I you know, there's challenges for sure. And we're used to it,
yeah.
you know, and we're used to everything's kind of a road game for us. We're always getting on a bus and, you know, our kids don't know any different, and that's just the way we operate.
Just the way it is, yeah.
The way it is, yeah.
Football season is going to look different for Buller High. You guys hired Lewis Franklin, who was the offensive coordinator of Clovis West the last couple years, and he's got a pretty good pedigree. He's been, you know, South Lake Tahoe and Tokay High School as
yeah,
well, right?
Yeah.
So what type of energy and what's going to bring to Buller High?
Yeah, we're excited. I mean, he's already on campus and he's teaching on campus already and around our kids, and you know, he's hit the ground running, and you know, we're excited. You know, it's nice when you can hire a coach in any sport that checks a lot of the boxes you as an AD you want checked. And you know, and we were super super lucky to be able to find a guy that could do that and who's got a lot of experience doing that. And so it's been a pleasure working with him so far, and yeah, we're looking forward to watching him on in the fall.
And baseball season's here. We mentioned Buller High School baseball. I beat San Joaquin Memorial yesterday on Mike Noakes Day, but you and I, we're big MLB guys.
Yes.
Right? You're an A's fan. You're
yes.
a tortured A's fan,
don't
I guess.
Don't hold that against me, yes.
I know. And, you know, I'm a Dodger fan, so I'm looking forward to, you know, not advancing very, very far in the playoffs.
Boy,
I mean, you got the World Series in 2020. I mean, that's
boy, we couldn't be any more
opposite.
On opposite sides of the spectrum here, the A's and the Dodgers. Like, I mean, you know, come on, man.
Okay, so here's the setup for you, right? You had a lot of conversations about the A's and where they're at, and I know you're a very disgruntled fan, but Stephen Vogt, CBC grad,
yep.
who's been on my show, he's the coach of the Cleveland Guardians, two-time All-Star with the A's,
yep.
right? Everybody
yep.
loves him
fan
in Oakland.
Favorite.
Fan favorite.
Yeah.
All that stuff. They're the Major League Baseball season starts for the Cleveland Guardians in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
where he's a fan favorite, like you said.
Yep.
He's the second youngest manager in Major League Baseball. However, from what you're telling me, there might not be a lot of people in the stands. What are you hearing?
Well, so there may not be a lot of people in the stands the whole season, but the one of the big A's fan groups who did a lot of really cool things last year, especially with the reverse boycott game, which I got
awesome.
To go to. It was a blast. And they're basically organizing an opening day boycott. And so they're going to plan a big event in the parking lot, and there's going to be a big tailgate. But from what I understand, they're not going into the game. So, you know, I even had a dilemma with my son. You know, my son's like, Dad, can we go to opening day? And I'm like, boy, this is family decision time here. Like, do we cross the picket line or not? Like, what do we do here? I don't know. Because this is probably going to be the last one, although they're talking about a lease extension. So we might get them for a few more years in Oakland. We'll
okay.
see.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So big family decisions
yeah.
for Brandon Gilbert
yeah.
regarding the Oakland A's.
Yeah.
We got to support Stephen Vogt a little
yeah,
bit, right?
I
At
know.
Least support the other guy.
I know.
Good stuff. All right, Brandon, always fun to talk to you. Wish we had more time. We'll
yeah.
have you on soon. We got tons of more stuff to talk about. But, yeah, Buller High School, baseball is looking really good. Football is going to look different next year. Basketball had a great run. So always great running to you. Thanks for stepping away from the softball tournament. Bring me a burrito.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much
always.
For having me.
All right, you bet. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First String Sports, Jorge Rodriguez, Gabe Camarillo, Jared Coleman, Adam Delgado, Gilbert Acosta, and, of course, Brandon Gilbert. We'll talk to you guys next week.